The inmates are running the asylum. I don't really like that phrase, and I'm not entirely comfortable using it in a sermon, but I don't know how else to say it. What was once surreal has become reality. Absurdity has become normal. Now, when I say the inmates are running the asylum, I'm not just talking about the folks in Washington. I'm talking about people like LeVar Ball and the media folks who found a way to make money by giving him a microphone. Or the proud parents who started a brawl at a Memphis high school graduation because somebody sat in seats saved for someone else. Or the countless others who simply don't know how to behave in public anymore, maybe because no one ever taught them. Don't get me started on the torch-wielding folks in Charlottesville, removing Confederate statues and renaming Confederate parks is a complex question. But when the people have spoken and decisions made decently and in order, you don't show up at night carrying torches unless your motives go beyond the preservation of history. For those of you who don't know Mr. Ball, Mr. Ball has a son, Lonzo, who is a pretty good basketball player, perhaps the best college player entering the NBA draft. By all accounts, Lonzo is a fairly quiet, selfless ball player who makes his teammates better. Mr. Ball has made a career of hyping his son with his outrageous words and antics. This week, Mr. Ball crossed a lot of lines when he disrespected, even threatened, Fox Sports reporter Christine Leahy. What has happened to common decency and self-respect? Why do we promote and glorify hate speech, misogyny, and racism? Where is our discretion? Where is our virtue? Shows like Monty Python, Benny Hill, and Saturday Night Live used to be funny because they were absurd. Nobody behaved like that. Now everyone behaves like that. And it's not funny. It's frightening. Okay, Melissa McCarthy's SNL portrayal of Sean Spicer and his motorized lectern, that's funny. But still a little frightening. These people are world leaders. I want to blame Jerry Springer. Back in 2000, he gave dysfunction a voice. He paved the way for the Kardashians and so many others to find their ways into our living rooms, giving us the impression the destructive life choices they were making are normal. This week, Dr. Phil featured a teenage girl who defended stealing and selling her mother's heirloom jewelry and throwing a pizza at her. Now, this stuff happens, but it's not normal. And it shouldn't be on TV. They should be seeking help as a family, privately. I want to blame Jerry and the media. But if I'm honest, I have to admit it's not just their fault. It's ours, too. The Jerry Springer Show was a media midway. His guests made the bearded lady, rubber man, and wolf boy seem normal. But then Jerry would come on stage afterward and say, "Listen, you deserve better than this. Don't live your life this way. I pray you will find the strength and perseverance to turn your life around." Now, we may question his motives or his sincerity. He put some very pathetic people on TV, and he profited from their suffering. But he also told each and every one, "Your life doesn't have to be this way. You deserve better. Change the way you live." He recognized their humanity. He gave them hope. Maybe even changed some lives. Isn't that our job? Beloved, we do a pretty good job preaching to the converted. But there's a whole other world out there. And as absurd as it may be, it's the world into which we have been called to proclaim the good news of God's love in Jesus Christ. And God will not be silenced. Recently released from prison for healing a fortune-telling slave girl, Paul, Silas, and presumably Timothy are traveling the Via Ignatia and arrive in Thessalonica, the capital city of Macedonia. There, as is his custom, Paul enters the local Jewish synagogue and begins teaching. Paul teaches on three consecutive Sabbaths about Jesus Christ, the suffering Messiah, whom God raised from the dead. Paul's preaching was well received by some of the Jews, many Gentiles, and a good number of the leading women of the city. However, there were many Jews in Thessalonica that did not appreciate Paul's preaching. Luke doesn't tell us why. Perhaps they were leaders in the synagogue, having a vested interest in maintaining the status quo. Perhaps they were devout Jews who took exception to calling Jesus Lord, a name previously reserved for God. Or perhaps they had theological concerns about a suffering Messiah. Their expectation had always been a powerful Messiah who would restore the Davidic monarchy. Whatever the source of their concerns, their zeal turned violent. Angered by Paul's preaching, they enlisted the help of ruffians in the city to start a riot. When the mob couldn't find Paul and his colleagues, they went to Jason's home, Paul's host, and had him arrested. Now, interestingly, the charges were not theological. The charges were political, disturbing the peace, subverting the authority of Caesar, proclaiming Christ as king. With the help of some believers, Paul, Silas, and presumably Timothy, escaped to Berea. There, Paul again enters the synagogue to preach. Here, the people were much more receptive to Paul's preaching. Many of them, Jews and Gentiles, women and men who were leaders in the community, came to believe. They accepted Paul's teaching eagerly and daily studied the scriptures to see if what he was saying was true. Luke tells us word got back to Thessalonica that Paul's preaching and teaching had been well received in Berea. And consistent with their character, the Thessalonian Jews came to Berea, as they did back home, stirred up crowds against Paul, and incited riots. With the help of some believers, Paul escapes to Athens, while Silas and Timothy stay behind, planning to join him later. Now, when Paul arrives in Athens, he follows his usual practice of preaching in the synagogue to Jews and Gentiles. Luke doesn't tell us how Paul was received in the synagogue. It's probably safe to assume some embraced his teaching and others didn't. But Athens isn't really about the Jews. Athens is about the Greeks and their philosophies. Luke tells us when Paul entered Athens, he was deeply distressed by all the idols. Some would even say he was greatly angered. So Paul takes to the marketplace to debate the Greeks on their own terms. In the synagogues, Paul relied on the Hebrew scriptures to make his point. In the marketplace, he resorts to reason. Facing Stoics and Epicureans, followers of two influential schools of philosophy, Paul begins to speak of their dedication to an altar to an unknown God. The NRSV tells us it was customary to erect an undedicated altar like this so as not to offend a God they might not know about. Paul sees their openness to the possibility of an unknown God as an opportunity to teach them about a God they do not yet know, the creator of heaven and earth, who raised Jesus Christ from the dead. Drawing on a variety of connections with Greek thought, Paul tells them, this God will not be found in shrines or idols or empty sanctuaries. This God transcends all human capacity to serve, yet is near to each of us. As some of the Greek poets had proclaimed, Paul said, in this God we live and move and have our being. This God is not cast from human imagination in stone or silver or gold. The likeness of this living God is to be seen in God's children. Though patient with human ignorance, Paul tells the Athenians, this unknown God will not be silenced. This unknown God has raised a man from the dead that all the world may know this unknown God is the Lord of life. Shortly, most of you will be joining us for our feast of celebration. To celebrate the growth in our ministries and the differences we are making in people's lives because of your generosity, we do have much for which to be grateful. And I am amazed at how the list of accomplishments has grown since our last celebration. There are some wonderful things happening in our ministries with children and youth, congregational care, and music. We are doing a great job ministering to ourselves and reaching out to others through mission. But what I hope you hear in all of this today is these are first steps, albeit great first steps. There is more for us to do in all of these areas. We have room to grow stronger together. But even more, there is more for us to do out there. Friends, we can wring our hands about the sideshow our nation has become, the lack of integrity in so many of our leaders, the narcissism, dissension, disrespect. We can hope and pray it will change someday. Or we can be the change and teach our children to be the change for which we hope and pray. That's why I spoke so strongly about the importance of Christian nurture last week. We and our children can be the change for which we hope and pray. Beloved, like the Apostle Paul, we have a message to proclaim to our world. Life doesn't have to be this way. Our God can bring life from death. People, especially those living in poverty, squalor, violence, and loneliness. In America or anywhere, deserve better, for they are God's children too. We have a message to proclaim, and whether we rise up to proclaim it or not, our God will not be silenced. Thanks be to God.